Welcome to the My Canine Coach podcast, a show that coaches dog owners on how to achieve their ideal lifestyle with and for their dogs. You'll hear from Canine Coach Dana as she breaks down actionable dog training protocols, explores current dog training trends, and shares insights from her own experiences owning and working with dogs. Now, here's your host, Canine Coach Dana. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the My Canine Coach podcast. I'm your host, Canine Coach Dana, and I'm joined by my sometimes silent co-host, Loki, who is my Bohemian Shepherd. Before we get into today's topic, I'm going to do something a little bit different here and share some of my own life updates first. I don't typically do that because seeing as this is a one-woman show, I find it hard sometimes to talk just to my mic about myself without having another person here so that it comes off more conversational and less like an indulgent segment where I just talk about myself. And like I've said before, I create these episodes for you all. I want them to serve as resources for you and not so much a diary of my life. But I did do something major last month that is worth sharing. And that's that Andrew and I bought our very first house. As I'm recording this, we haven't moved in yet, but by the time that you hear this, we will officially be living there. We had been looking for over 2 years, and finally, we found one worth going for, and we were lucky enough to have our offer chosen. For those of you who don't know, Andrew and I have been living in an apartment for years, and for anyone who lives in an apartment with a dog, especially a high drive dog, you know the struggle of that lifestyle and that routine. The very fact that we will have a backyard that is all our own for Loki to enjoy is such a massive change to our lifestyle. Right now, we have just this small area of grass that is right on the corner of the street that our building is on. And by we have, I should say we get to use that little tiny patch of grass because as renters, we don't own shit. But Loki has to be on leash everywhere in our complex or we face fines, which makes working him or playing extremely difficult to do where we live. So we often have to drive somewhere to give him the room that he needs. And it's just like this huge task that just suddenly no longer exists anymore. And it's so amazing to think about that being our reality in a week. Plus, now we're not sharing walls or ceilings or floors with so many other people. So Loki is actually free to be more of a dog. He can bark without consequence. He can run around without downstairs neighbors getting upset. He can make noise, which hasn't been an option for him or for us for the entire time that we've had him. His life and our lives are changing for the better, and I'm so excited for it. For my clients who are listening in, don't worry, I'm not moving out of the area. I'm actually only moving a few streets over, ironically. So my service area remains exactly the same, which is another blessing, honestly, because then I don't have to reestablish myself in a new area. So as of this episode's release date, we've officially moved, which still feels so far away to me right now as I'm recording this, even though it's next week. If you want to send me a housewarming gift, my new address is, I'm just kidding, no, I'm not going to put that out there. But if you want to help me celebrate, the best way you could do that is by giving the podcast a review. I know I ask for them every month when episodes drop, but they are essential to making it grow. So if you want to celebrate with me, please post a review of the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening from. Okay, so that's my life update. Now let's get into the actual episode. This one's going to kind of be an extension of episode 15, where I talked about using training tools and when I think it's appropriate to graduate from using them. It's an extension not because we're going to jump back into that specific topic, but because using tools and not having to use them anymore is going to come into play during this episode. But where I'd like to start is by first giving some backstory. So I was driving, actually, when this thought hit me, and I made a voice note of it because I knew that I wanted to share it as a podcast episode. I was coming back from a lesson where I had just graduated a client from my off-leash training program, And at the end of the lesson, we were reviewing what the client would have to do on a daily and weekly basis to maintain all of the training that we had accomplished over the course of the lessons. And I was saying how in order for the reliability of this dog's off-leash obedience to remain really high, they would have to practice or touch on all of the off-leash behaviors that we had taught the dog at least once a week. And why I was saying that was to ensure that the training stuck and remained at that level that we were able to achieve and get it to over the course of time that these owners were going to have this dog without my direct involvement anymore. Because training is just like any skill that you develop, whether it's shooting free throws for basketball or learning how to ride a bike or drawing. If you're not frequently practicing those skills, you start to lose them. And the same goes for the skills that we teach our dogs. If we don't touch on them on a semi-frequent basis, then the dog starts to lose the skill to carry out those behaviors or the training that we taught them. And then the owner starts to lose the skill also of knowing when to ask for certain behaviors, how to ask for certain behaviors, when to use tools, how to use the tools, et cetera, et cetera. So both the handler or the owner and the dog start to lose the skill sets that they need. So as I was driving home from that lesson, I started thinking about Loki's training and how often I touch on the commands or behaviors that I've taught him and how often I've had to follow through in ensuring he completes those behaviors adequately through the use of his e-collar. Because I'm going to stick with this scenario of off-leash training because this is the area of training where I care the most about the quality of the training and the efficacy of the training. Because dogs make stupid choices. And if they're not attached to us on a leash or a long line, I want to be 100% certain that my dog's training and response to their e-collar is going to keep them safe. And I know I've shared this before on previous episodes that Loki and I train every day for about a half hour to an hour. And a lot of that isn't really structured. What I mean by that is I don't go out there with the intention of working on something specifically or having a certain goal in mind. Mainly, we go outside with the intention to play his favorite games, play with his favorite ball on a rope. And then through play, I randomly ask for certain obedience behaviors before I reward him with the toy. But I don't typically have a specific behavior that I'm often working on. I'm simply throwing out random commands to him. So on any given day, we may touch some of these off-leash behaviors that I want to keep fine-tuned, like dropping into a down when I ask, no matter where he is in relation to me, or coming back to me when I call him. So I'd say on a semi-daily basis, we do touch on all of the off-leash behaviors that I want to keep fine-tuned. But whether I have to use the e-collar or not is even harder for me to determine thinking back on it. And here's where we really get around to the topic of today's episode, because in thinking about all of this, I wasn't able to remember how often I have to rely on Loki's tool, the e-collar, to ensure that he complies with what I'm asking him to do. And that ultimately is the point of quality off-leash training. You shouldn't have to use the tool every time you need to recall your dog to get your dog to come back to you. If you're working on an off-leash recall or an off-leash anything, and every time you ask your dog to do something, you have to follow it up by using the stim on the e-collar, then you're still at a very early stage of off-leash training. And that dog and yourself are not ready to be graduates of off-leash training. My standard for an off-leash trained dog is a dog that responds to your commands when given without having to use that tool to ensure that they do them. But they do wear the tool, the e-collar, just in case they encounter something or you're in a situation where they kind of want to test whether they need to go back to you or drop into a down or whatever it is that you're asking. And you have that tool on them to back up your command and ensure that it happens. But in your everyday application, you're not using the e-collar under most circumstances. In order to get there, you have to undergo lengthy and rigorous training. There is a lot of generalization and proofing that needs to be done. And if you're unfamiliar with what those words mean, generalization or proofing, generalization means that the dog learns that a command, let's pretend that it's down, applies to all variety of scenarios. Dogs are really poor generalizers. They have very context-specific brains. And what that means is if they learn the command down in your backyard, and then you go to the park and ask your dog to down at the park, they won't inherently apply the rules of that command when they're at the park. They will have only understood that down happens in their backyard and that it doesn't apply at the park. That is, until we teach them to down at the park. So when I say generalization, I mean for every single command that we teach that dog, the dog has to go to a variety of places to learn to do that command under a variety of circumstances so that it then becomes generalized. And you have to do that, like I said, for every single command. So you can see how training becomes lengthy and more involved. That's what I mean by lengthy and rigorous. You have to go out and go to a lot of places, which just takes time and scheduling. Proofing is similar to generalization in that you will be taking your dog to different places or putting them in different circumstances to show them that the rules of this command still apply no matter what is happening around them. Proofing is where we start to challenge the dog and put them in situations where it's likely that they will make a mistake so that then we can show them that that choice was incorrect. And on the next repetition, we can teach them how to be correct. Typically, we do proofing after the command has been generalized to a variety of places so that we know that the dog already understands that, oh yeah, I am supposed to down at the park. I am supposed to down in the backyard. It applies here and here and here and here. And then what we do is we go back to those places, knowing that the dog understands the command we're asking, knowing that the dog can do what we're asking, and then we start to up the ante and make it more challenging. So an example of proofing would be asking your dog to down, and then you'd get them to lay down, and then you'd have a ball roll by. And at first, maybe we're doing this just in the backyard because the dog already knows how to down in the backyard. It's been generalized there. Now we're upping the ante. We're making it more difficult for that dog to stay in that down because now there's something else exciting going on. When we're proofing, we're challenging the dog against distractions or circumstances or scenarios that might typically come up and tempt our dog to get up out of the down without being told that they have permission to do so, or to not come back to you when you call them. So you can imagine how much work goes into getting a dog to be 100% off-leash trained, where no matter the circumstance, no matter the distraction or the temptation, they will follow through with your command and you don't have to rely on using the e-collar to make sure that they're going to do what you asked. And so with Loki, we have gotten there and we frequently work on these things to make sure that the training sticks. But I realized something about why I rarely have to rely on the e-collar with Loki. And it's not so much because of the practice that we do on a daily basis or because of all the generalization I've done or all of the proofing. Because honestly, I have not done a lot of generalization. I would say maybe I've done like 20% generalization, which is pretty low and pretty poor for a two-year-old dog. I've probably done more proofing, but I have done zero generalization around other dogs and zero proofing around other dogs. So he's missing like a whole chunk of off-leash training. And so knowing that and also realizing that I don't often have to rely on the e-collar, it's dawned on me that the reason why I have a highly off-leash trained dog without going through a lot of generalization or proofing is because of the relationship that we have. Ever since I got Loki, my focus has been on our relationship. I've prioritized demonstrating and showing him that it's worth it to pay attention to me and that I have his best interest in mind. Relationship is one of those buzzwords that gets thrown around a lot within the dog training industry. And I find that from trainer to trainer, what they mean by relationship varies greatly. So in prepping for this episode, I tried to come up with my own definition of what I mean by relationship. I don't really have a firm, like, one-line sentence definition, but I can talk about it as if it's a concept. Because it's not something that's really tangible. It's not something that you can see, really. But there are certain aspects to it that stand out. And the biggest one that comes to mind is that if you have a great relationship between yourself and your dog cares about what you want and how you feel. You are something that they consider when they make choices. If you have a dog that cares about your interests or what you want to happen in any given situation, then that dog is more likely to do what you ask without the need for a tool to ensure that they follow through and actually do it. If I can explain this in human-to-human relationship terms, there are certain people in your life that you consider when you make choices. For instance, if you want to go to a concert, it's highly likely that you're going to run that idea by your partner instead of just going. But you're not going to run that idea by your coworker, because in that relationship, their personal preferences don't impact your personal choices. You wouldn't consider their opinion in that scenario or how it would make them feel if you went to the concert. And that's probably a crappy analogy, but my point is to convey that there are certain people that you consider when you make choices throughout your day or throughout your life, and it's because they mean something to you. You value having them in your life. So if your dog values having you in their life, then when you ask them to do something, they're more likely to do what you ask because they feel like they gain something by having and maintaining a relationship with you. Where I often see this illustrated, or where I can assess a dog and their owner's relationship the best, is when the dog is off leash and has freedom to make choices independently of their owner. So maybe that's when you're out in a field somewhere and your dog's off leash doing what it wants to do. A dog who likes their owner but hasn't experienced time and time again this concept of their owner being of immense value to them, that dog tends to go off and do their own thing without checking in on where their owner is. So you'll see the dog start sniffing something, and then gradually they're moving farther and farther away. And at no point do you see the dog pick its head up and look around to make sure that they know where their owner is. It's also common for that dog to stay away from the owner, not as in like they don't want to come back to the owner, but you don't ever see them start to just kind of gravitate back towards their owner, even just like a little bit, just to make sure that they're still there. They tend to just kind of be off in their own world, and their owner isn't even registering in their brain at all. They're just off doing their own thing. That's a dog who hasn't experienced purposeful relationship-based training. Or it's a husky, because they tend to just go do whatever they want, no matter who their owner is. We love our huskies, but they're very independent. But with Loki, if he goes more than like 20 yards maybe away from me, he picks his head up and he scans to make sure he knows where I am before he goes back to doing what he was doing. And sometimes he just comes running back just to see if there's something that I want to do together with him. And because of that, I tend not to have to use my tool to get him to come back to me. Or more importantly, I don't often have to recall him at all, because he wants to spend time and he wants to be in proximity with me anyway. So if he's off gallivanting somewhere and I just start moving away from him, he just starts coming back towards me. And that's not because I taught him that. It's because he values our relationship and he values what I give him. I'm something that he considers. So if I'm leaving or moving away from him, he's going to want to stay closer to me. He's going to want to come back towards where I am. So that's what I mean when I say relationship matters. If you have a solid relationship with your dog where they care about you and your interests, It makes training so much easier. Is it necessary? Do you have to have this amazing relationship with the dog in order to train it? No, you don't. But to me, it feels a lot better. The training feels a lot better. I feel better about the training and how it's affecting my dog or the dog I'm working with. And the training just goes a lot smoother because the dog is invested in the trainer or the handler. A dog that is invested in its teacher is more likely to be a good pupil. I'm sure we've all had a teacher once in our lives that we really hated, and we didn't do the best in that class because we didn't care about doing our assignments or doing what the teacher asked because we didn't like them. But I'm sure we've also had a teacher that we absolutely loved, and it made doing the work more enjoyable. It made attending class more enjoyable. It made us want to do better on our assignments, so we did better, and that class seemed to be easier for us. And that's what I mean by the training going smoother or being so much easier, right? So hopefully all of that sounds great to you, but I really haven't given you any practical instruction on how to create or foster this wonderful relationship with your dog. There are 5 aspects of relationship building that I focus on, and I'm not going to go into detail on all of them, but I am going to touch on each of them so you'll have kind of a general overview of them, and you can put into practice some of the things that I talk about. If you're a puppy training system member, that's my online puppy training course, you can go check out all 5 of these relationship aspects or factors in that course at any time. You probably are familiar with them already because we cover them in detail in the course. But to list them very quickly, they are rules, boundaries, structure, clarity, and play. All right, so let's get into these. Rules. These are the limits that you set on what your dog is allowed to do in and outside of your home. There are just certain things that our dogs are not allowed to do ever. And you'll hold them accountable for breaking these rules in ways like removing their access to something or withholding something that they desire or removing them from a situation. These are overarching laws that are in effect all of the time, no matter what. They are absolutes. You are never allowed to do them. And they're part of relationship building because they hold yourself and your dog to reasonable expectations. And they demonstrate that both parties are accountable in that relationship. You both have to follow through in adhering to these rules. Boundaries are similar to rules in that they do set limits, but these are looser. And they're more for how often or how long our dog has access to something. So they're not off-limit things. They do allow you to have whatever these things are. Maybe it's time on the couch or getting pet. You can have those things, but there are boundaries involved. You can't have them forever and always. Getting petted is like my favorite one to talk about for boundaries because I encounter a lot of dogs that demand getting pet by their owners by invading their owner's space and pawing at them and nudging them or climbing into their lap or climbing up on them. And the owners often give in to those demands because it's cute and they like that their dog wants attention from them, but they fail to set any boundaries for when that behavior is not appropriate. And they really have no way of then stopping their dog from demanding that attention because no boundaries were ever set in the first place. And so here's the difference between boundaries and rules, right? It's not a rule that they can't have attention. It's not like you're never going to give your dog attention, but there are certain boundaries that need to be set to uphold the owner's right to personal space and personal choice to not engage with that dog if they choose not to. For the third one, structure, I want you to think of structure as synonymous with routine. What is it that your dog can predictably rely on from you? Often, that is having an understanding of when it's time to go in the crate, when they get fed, when they go out to go potty, how often they get to go on walks, how often they get to play, et cetera, et cetera. Structure shows your dog that you will show up for them and meet their needs on a daily basis, and you will hold yourself responsible for that. Clarity ties the last three aspects of relationship building that we just talked about, rules, boundaries, and structure, all together, and that you follow through on all three of these things. You demonstrate to your dog that the rules always apply, the boundaries are always in effect, and the structure remains the same day in and day out. This makes it overwhelmingly clear to your dog what the structure, rules, and boundaries are. And in essence, it makes it very clear to your dog where that relationship stands or where their relationship stands with you. This also makes it really easy for your dog to operate within those relationship standards that you are asking them to uphold because they have clarity over what you're asking of them. And our fifth and final aspect of relationship building is play. This is the one that I find that I have to put the most work towards because once I really have rules, boundaries, and structure set, and my dog is clear about what those are, they just really become routine and you don't have to think about them as much. But play is something that you actively have to choose to do with your dog, and you have to be intentional about it. I recorded two entire episodes on play that you can go back and listen to so you can start working on this massive part of relationship building. They include detailed instruction on how to get started playing with your dog and how to be intentional about the way that you play and how you can use that to then train your dog to do certain things. They also go into great detail on how play is such a major factor when it comes to relationship building. So I highly recommend going back and listening to those. They are episodes 5 and 6. What makes play the most important part of relationship building is that through it, you get to reaffirm all the four prior aspects of relationship building through the games that you play. So you get to demonstrate rules, boundaries, structure, and provide clarity, which I can go on and on about play, which is why there are two whole episodes on it. So you can go and listen to those. But play is really the biggest part or the biggest piece of the pie. If we did a pie chart, it would be the largest section when it comes to relationship building, because it just reaffirms all of the other four in a completely different way that the dog then generalizes. We learned that word today. And just truly strengthens your relationship between you and your dog. So I dropped a lot of episodes in here as recommendations to go back and listen to. My biggest recommendation would be go back and listen to episodes 5 and 6 on play if you haven't already, and then start working on improving the relationship that you already have with your dog. It takes things, honestly, to a whole new level. It's so worth it. So I hope you liked the change up in our episode today. If you like my life updates, let me know. I'll include more of them. They're just weird to do when I'm just sitting here by myself. But if you do like them, I'll add more of them in. Just let me know in the Facebook group or let me know in a review. If you'd like to get in touch with me about training or to give feedback or ask a question, the best way to do that is by visiting my website, mycaninecoach.com. And there you can request a consultation or you can send me an email at caninecoachdana@gmail.com. Both of those are listed in the show notes. You can join the Facebook group for the podcast that I just mentioned. If you're looking to connect with other cool dog people, or you want to crowdsource information about dogs, or you want to give me feedback, the link to that is also in the show notes. If you want a direct connection to me, you can subscribe to my email list via my website. Doing that, you'll get updates from me on all things Canine Coach. You'll get training tips, alerts when episodes drop. And for my email list people, I send a newsletter in the middle of each month that recaps all the major points of that month's podcast episode. So you don't have to go back and listen to the whole thing to review all the highlights. So jump on that if you want those emails. But most importantly, as I've said probably 1,000 times in this episode, please like and write a review for my show to help it grow. That's the best way that you can support me. If you want to help celebrate, or if you want to be part of celebrating the fact that Andrew and I bought a house and Loki has a backyard, please write us a review. That's it for this episode. I'll see you next time. Loki and I are going to go do some cool dog stuff.